Ahead of us, we are going to talk to you about our journey of migrating TFS to the cloud. We've had quite a bit of experience doing this, and there's a number of options. I'm going to take you through the seven options, and then I'm going to hand you over to Daniel, and he's going to go through the exact steps that we went through. So prior to that, there was quite a story of different options we've tried. I want to tell you what they are. They involve some third-party tools as well. We have done a lot of stuff with TFS. I've been working with TFS since the beginning, since 2005. Both Daniel and I are MVPs in the ALM space, and we've done heaps and heaps of this for clients. So I think if you're in this room, I guess you're thinking of this, and we can save you some heartache. All right, here's how Daniel and I have broken down the session. We're going to tell our initial war story of this, options we investigated, and there's seven of them, and what we ended up doing. So, we're going to tweak the slide deck at the end so you don't have to take heaps of notes. That's my Twitter and Daniel's Twitter. All right, so just a little about me first. My name is Adam Cogan. I work for a company called SSW. We are based in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane. I'm the chief architect at SSW, and I'm a Microsoft regional director. It means I get to go to the States a couple of times a year, and I get to hang out with the prog group and hear lots of interesting conversations with lots of other regional directors and all the pain they're having. I always find it interesting how like all the European RDs have a lot of similar problems, and you know the South American RDs have a lot of similar problems, and the Americans, so they often discuss all theirs, and they're often in unison. All right, I'm an MVP, as I said. And I was born in the Hunter Valley in a place called Denman. How many people know where Denman is? Okay, three. Good. All right. So this is Daniel. Do you want to say anything about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a solution architect at SSW, and I love everything that's happening around the DevOps space. So I am an MVP for ALM. I deeply care about TFS, VSTS, and how to actually, make sure that the clients and all other companies embrace DevOps practices, because DevOps is not just about tools, it's more like a culture change than anything else. So I like to stay on top of everything that's bleeding edge, so you're going to hear more about when I come to my part.
Okay, so here is the war story. It starts, it's a real scenario. This guy in our office called JK, and we have a product that we work on. And he says, an innocent thought to himself, he works on a product that we developed called SSW Time Pro, and it's just a time sharing solution we originally developed for ourselves, and lots of other people use it, and it's on TFS VC. And he just says to himself, wouldn't it be good if TFS itself, sorry, our this project was on Git? So the next morning, during the daily scrum, he says, you know what? I think it'd be good to switch this to Git, because all our new projects are on Git. What about this one? Nick happens to be in there, and this is Nick Weinholt, for those that know. And he goes, whoa, I really want that. Like, if you can get it, he hears something different. He just wants, he's a big Power BI guy, he's into data, and one of the projects he can't analyze is this one, because it's on-premise, and most of our projects are in the cloud. And all the stuff in the cloud works with Power BI and gives these great dashboards. So he goes, oh yeah, I want this. Well, Yuli, who happens to be the Scrum Master, well, he hears it from two of the team leaders and says, oh, well, I guess we put that at the top of the backlog. Let's do that. Who's going to do it? Nick goes, no problems, I'll do that. And just before I jump on to what happened with the rest of the story, just to fill this out, this is kind of where we sit with our divisions. We've got TFS. It's on-premise, you've got complete control, you can make customizations to your heart's content. There's lots and lots of features that you get, but you have to install the updates, so that's maintenance. And if we were to want to scale this out and, you know, any of the, well, if we got a lot more users, we'd certainly need more service. Now, VSTS, it's hosted in the cloud, you're getting features earlier, so the guys are in our office. The guys are allowed to create team projects on-premise, on our tfs.ssw, or on our cloud version, ssw.visualstudio.com. So they can go either way, but almost all of them, I'd say 90% of them, choose VSTS because they get the newer features. There's no maintenance. It's got the Power BI connector. And, well, now we can host it in Australia. I think it's pretty good. All right, so Nick has a look at the different options. And these are the different options. And he has a look. And this happens very briskly. He gets the latest version. He goes into VSDS. He creates a new team project. He copies that code up into the new project. He checks in the code, has a look at it, and that's done. Pretty simple, pretty quick. And we're talking hours involved in this whole process. So the pros and cons of this one. It's very fast to get this done. Anyone can do this. It's very slow because you're going to have to do this on every single team project to be able to decommission. Every single project you'll have to do this on. And I don't know how many we have. I'm going to guess we have 100 or 200. It's been there forever. So that's quite a bit of a pain. It's not a showstopper at this point. But when I find out I'm not getting the work items, he just says, well, we'll just put the current ones there and kind of start from scratch. Oh, didn't like that. And then we're going to lose all the history. He says, Ness, you're not really going to lose it. You can look back at the old server if you really want it. And, how long are you going to keep the old server? A few months? Oh, I didn't like the sound of that. All right, so I give this an award. I give this the Notepad Award, okay? Extremely simple. I didn't go for it. So, option two. We can take the latest version and migrate the work items using Excel. So, we do exactly what we did before. We take the latest version. We go and create the new team project, copy the code up, and we're kind of where we are before. Then we check in the code, and then we open up Excel, connect to TFS, export the work items to Excel, and then reconnect Excel to the VSDS account, and you press the publish button in Excel, and you're done. All right? So, I'm not that comfortable with this. There's a number of reasons why, and I'll just tell you the good before I tell you the bad. It's super fast. This process is, we're still talking some hours. It's pretty simple. It's going to be double the work that we just talked about. It's the work items and it's the source code. You're going to lose everything but the current version of the source code and the current version of the work items. Even the work items are kind of crippled because we're talking about limitations of Excel and massive descriptions are going to be chopped. It's going to be even worse than that because we have a lot of, in our code, when you check in code, you can associate that to a work item. All that gets clobbered as well, so that's not awesome. So I give this one an award. I give this the Notepad Plus Award. Okay? It's not really where I wanted to get to. So option three, let's talk about option three. Now this is to convert our Team Foundation version control to Git. And we're going to do this, and Nick knows I want the history. I'm not going to be appeased by just, I don't know when I'm going to have a problem, but I often, when there is a problem and bad code, I always want to know. Like I love blame, and I want to know. I want to know who it is. I'm sure it's not very good Scrum, but I want to know the root cause analysis all the time. So I don't like guys fixing other people's code without at least CCing them on the done, at least informing them. This was how we did it. It was a fragile regex. We've converted it to this more solid code, or we've added some tests around it so it can't happen again. So with this source code history, there is a tool. There is a Microsoft tool. I might even click it just so you can see. And many of our guys have used this, and it's just a pretty simple tool. There is also another one, and this comes from the community. This one is called Git TFS. And it's a bridge. And if you have a look here, it's a bridge here. Let me just
show you. Adam, can you go to 125?
Oh, thank you. I will. What type of browser are you using here, sir?
I've never seen this. It's Opera.
Opera. Okay. Okay.
It won't be there. Just click on the menu. Hold on.
Oh, goodness gracious. Why don't you just use Chrome like everyone else in the world?
I do. It's a Chrome-based browser, but it gives me plenty of other things. Oh, this 125. Let's make it 150.
Okay, thank you. Okay. All right. This is a real productivity browser.
It is.
So this is a bridge, and this bridge, like if you were a Git guy and you really, really wanted you only knew Git, but you had to work on a TFS project, you could just use this bridge, work in Git the way that you would want to normally work. If you're a TFS guy and they make you work with Git and you don't want to become cool and learn all the commands and stuff, you can work your own way, and under the covers this bridge updates that. So you can use either of these tools to go ahead and get that migration working. I would recommend the second one. It handles branches a little. Now we just do the steps we said before. We create the team project, we run whichever tool we want, and we publish the code. So in summary, Nick would assume I'm happy with this. I get my source code history. It is a bit slow to run. We're talking about replaying every single change. It's still done on a project-by-project basis, so it's going to take some time. There's some issues with branching. I guess you could, clean up and get rid of your branches at first. You'll lose everything else. And, we're talking about your builds and build history, pretty much, and your work items. So I give this an award, okay? I give this the Cobbler Award. Cobblers used to make their own shoes. Daniel Day-Lewis was a cobbler. And there are not many around. And the problem with it, cobblers don't even exist anymore, do they? Everything's been outsourced to manufacturing, so that's why I give it the Cobbler Award. All right. Anyway, Nick has a look at that. He says, look, devs only care about source control. I'll convert it. He did that. He actually went ahead and did that. He went from our TFS server through the converter into visualstudio.com and had a look. And if you have a look there, you can see that he's got the TimePro project converted. He looks at all the dates. They look legit. He thinks that's pretty decent. He then feels like he's fulfilled our conversation. He sends out an email and he says, hey, sswvisualstudio.com is a single source of truth for this one project called SSW TimePro. I see that email. I said, hang on a sec. It's not what I approved. What happened to the work items, the sprints, the test cases? And I was being kind with that email, I think. So, fast forward for a few days later. I think about this problem a bit more. There's a few more conversations going on in the office. And I say, actually, I know that JK just wanted his one little project converted and you just wanted, your little Power BI requirement. I think I've changed my mind, and that they often hate me getting involved in this stuff, but I think let's just do the whole thing in one go. I don't want to go through this pain for every single project we've got. Let's do this, and I want a high fidelity solution. I want everything that I have today, and I want it moved. Can you investigate out there? We've used different tools for different clients. We have a bit of knowledge on it. Who wants to do that? Well, Nick certainly doesn't want to do that. He goes, I don't know how long that's going to take. That was Daniel's response. I've got strong teeth. I say, all right, if you want to do it. Now I want to be clear. We're talking about a solution that can take a few hours and actually was done to a solution that we didn't actually know how long this would take. So I wanted Daniel to go off, investigate for a couple of days and tell me the different options. And this is kind of the story that I got back and I want to tell you. So here's my goal. Migrate everything from our TFS server to visualstudio.com. How many people have that requirement in the room? Okay. All right. It looks like 90, 95% of the room. Great. So I want source code, source control and history. I want all work items, all work item history, all associations from work items to source code, etc. I want all my test cases, and I want my build definitions and all the history. That's what I want. So this is the path. It's going to be a long path to the cloud. Let's see what it is. So we've got to choose the right door, and I'm just going to take you through the next option. So I've told you option one. Okay? And I told you option two was kind of option one with option two. I don't like them. Option three is the community tool. I don't like that one either. There is another tool out there that Daniel showed me, and that is actually by an ex-SSW guy. It's called VSTS Sync Migrator. I'm going to call this out because it does include work items the way that with all history and associations. I want to talk about a commercial tool called Ops Hub and another one called Timely Migration. And then there's another one called TFS, Database Import Service. Okay, long name, so it's a Microsoft product. Okay, so option four. Let me just take you through this VSTS Sync Migrator. You clone your code. You have your Microsoft tool or your community tool. You create your team project. Then the work items are done, not with Excel, but use his thing that you downloaded. It's a VSTS Sync Migrator, and you import the work items. So you grab the tool. You configure this JSON file. Now, when the work items go up to the cloud, the work item IDs will change, and we don't want to lose the association with the code. So we go into our, we run this VSTS Sync Migrator against our local source code, and it will change the work items to what they are in the cloud, and it kind of fixes this up and publish the code. Now, that is the kind of the JSON file that you need to configure. It's not a lot of work, but I will tell you that it does keep my source code history and allow my work item tweaking. And I would say if you just want one team project converted correctly, this is an option, okay? And this might have been the best option for us. If I hadn't got in my head, I want to decommission my TFS server in the office and just give them the cloud, because we were using it for 90% of projects anyway. So it's very slow. It takes forever because it's replaying all the changes. It's complex. You've got a JSON file to configure. And if I'm happy with it, then I have to do it on a lot of other projects. And we're talking in our office between 100 and 200 probably. And I lose everything but my source control and my work items. Now, granted, they're the most important, but I still lose, and we've got associations between bugs and builds and things like that. I'd lose that. It's not as big a deal to me, but I just want to call it out. So the verdict. I give this one the MacGyver Award. Okay? It's kind of cobbling a number of things together. Got a bit of sticky tape here, a few band-aids there. I think it does the job. And you have a successful outcome. Now, I just want to call out a couple of other tools. Now, we have used these on some jobs with simple TFS service. Hasn't been too bad, but in general, this is the way this... Anyone heard of Ops Hub in the room? Just two people. All right. So, you create... This is a tool that, for some people, is pretty much the only commercial tool out there, but there is another one. So, you provide the destination and source endpoints. You choose what you want to migrate, basically code and work items. You select the team projects you want to migrate. You map your source users to destination users. You run a validation. You inspect all the issues. You create a new team project with the exact same name, and you rerun the validation. You run the import, and then you wait for the thing to fail. So you'll notice that when you have a look at it, it is unusual, the way it kind of works. And you can see, even if you look at, say, a check-in here versus what it looks like when it's been converted, it's all been mashed up and not exactly replayed. So it's not a like-for-like comparison. I didn't like the look of that. The dates aren't the same. You do have, a running change history. It's just not identical. I don't think that's much good. It is the free version for our server didn't work. The weird thing is it doesn't work, but you're kind of encouraged to buy the real version. That might work. Okay? All right. It's quite restrictive. We also had some other problems that we wanted When we're doing this, we'd already had some projects created with the exact same name, so we wanted to give it a different name, and we couldn't do that. So it's really restrictive, and you need to map all users to the VSTS accounts. The migrated history is terrible. I wasn't really interested. The only good thing, if you ask me, is this button up the top. All right, I'm going to give this one the Dead Donkey Award. All right, I don't like it much. All right. So, the timely migration is another tool out there. And the way this works, another commercial offering, this one doesn't have a free version like the other one. You create your new team project, you open up timely migration, you configure a session, you select your source repository, you select your destination repository, you map your TFS folders, you run the session on the tool, you map the users, and you migrate the content. So, it is okay. It works. You only get your source code history. It only supports TFVC. It's still done on a project basis, so I'd still have to do this a lot more times to get everything migrated. It's $2,000, if you consider that a lot or not. If it worked beautifully with a lot more, we'd be talking turkey, but it didn't. So you lose everything but your source code history. Not okay for me. I'm going to give this the Waste of Money Award, okay? But I don't think it's much trouble. All right. Then, just recently, we're talking about, very short time ago, this thing came out, okay, for Christmas. How many people have heard of the TFS Migrator in the room? Okay, two. One's Daniel. You don't count. All right. So, I think that you'll be happy with this solution, and Daniel looked at this and he gave me this kind of summary, and I'll just tell you how I understood it, and then from that point on, I was happy with the sound, and the way it worked in reality was a little different to how it was described, so I want to tell you how you understand it, because essentially, you've got to read a 60-page book when you get this. You get this thing from Microsoft, they've covered every possible scenario, they've got quite a large team on this problem, and I'm just going to summarize the 60 pages, all right? So, you've got to check your database collation straight away because they're only supporting two collations, okay? The Latin one and the Latin one, all right? So if you don't know, that they're the two primary ones. That CI is case insensitive, accent sensitive. That should cover all of you. Does anyone know that they don't fit in that bucket? No one. No one in this room. Good. All right. So you've got to download this thing from the Microsoft site. It's an .exe and a document, and the document is a long document. So it's divided, if you look on the left-hand side, the whole document is divided into six sections. Getting started, the prerequisites, upgrade your TFS, validate your TFS, get ready, and then import. Okay? And that's kind of the way Daniel took me through it. This is what's going to be involved. We choose the data center. Probably choose Australia. We reserve our VSTS account, so I had to get SSW2.visualstudio, okay? I couldn't throw it into my existing collection or the existing team project we have up there, existing account. While it was, this is just a very temporary step, you had to go in and request an invitation code, but very, very shortly that step won't exist. We had to say who we were, and they said, oh, cool. All right. So, step number two is you need to go ahead and create your Azure account. We already had one. We had to configure our Azure AD, and we had to sync our Azure AD account up to the cloud. All right? So, you go to this URL, you run that, and we're in sync. That part we gave to our sysadmin, Stan, and he did that. He doesn't do very much. He did that. All right, so this is what he did. He gets this guy, he clicks on this wizard, he goes, oh, hello, I'll use the express settings, that sounds easy. I'll give it our username on for Azure AD, and I'll give it my DS, and so there's our domain services password. We go forward and we press install. Okay, so that part is done. So moving on to the TFS server itself. You've got to, they tell you, take it back up first, then upgrade to TFS 2015 Update 3, okay? Or you could, they give a warning and they say, you can't use that until, you've got to do that until April, okay? Now, after that, or you could right now install TFS 2017. How many people here are already on TFS 2017 in their office? Just three. Okay, cool. So, now be aware, that could be an adoption blocker in some companies. They would say, hey, I don't want to go through this pain of converting everyone to this. Don't think of that. That doesn't stop you from doing this process. You could not convert any of the users to 2017, but just have this part in the actual steps of the migration. Okay? It's great if you get them onto 2017 or update 3, but if that's a problem, just have this as the first step in, the, in when you take down, when you turn off the server or stop the server from, because you're going to have some downtime running this, and Daniel will talk about that in a sec. All right. So, now just to be clear, if you're on an old server, who here is on 2015? TFS 2015. Okay, it looks like 90% in the room. So, who's on 2013? Okay, we've got four hands. So, you can still go smoothly to 2017. Who's on 2012? Whoa, that is about eight hands. All right, so you can still go in one go. Who's on 2010? Wow, three. Okay, you got a double hop process. We got anyone on 2008? Please. Oh, my God.
No.
Where do you guys work? Where do you work?
Did you
care? Oh, no. Okay, and 2005, please. Spare me. All right, good. No one. All right, that's healthy. Yes. Okay, so the question for those that didn't hear is, he's asking, when you do an upgrade, do you do an in-place or do you do it to a fresh server? When you guys do an upgrade, who does it in-place? In-place, half the room. Who does it to a fresh server? Okay, less. Okay, so 30%. All right, so number three, run the configure features. So you look at this guide. And I had a look at this. You click on this guy. We're going to open this Opera browser. Let's see if it works. So you come through here, and basically you configure the features. How do I zoom this thing?
Control plus.
There we go.
Control scroll.
And what you need to do, it's very defensive of his browser, isn't he?
I am.
So
it's got VPN.
Oh, it's got VPN functionality. Why would you need that, Daniel?
Because it's a MacGyver thing. Right. You know, I have to go through all that pain.
All right. Well, I don't need those secretive things. All right. So code review. So all these features, basically, you can turn on from this tool. Now, this is team project by team project. There is another one, and that is this guy. If you want to do it all in one go, we have this, and this is some script you could run that cycle through all the team projects and execute it. Okay, so they're the two options, just to enable all the features. So, if you're somebody who is looking at this, you know, just they're not going to do it straight away, you need to think about when you're going to do it, because the problem is the cloud is a moving beast and it's changing. And so what Microsoft have said is you're not going to be able to convert from TFS 2015 Update 3 forever, because we're moving along on the train. So for that reason, we're giving you this sliding six-month support. Here you go. From if you're going to do it up until March, you'll be happy. If So you can see now these are proposed dates as well. You know, it's likely to change and usually slip further, isn't it? That's the usual way. But you can expect update 1 in March and update 2 in June. So if you're on 2017, now we're talking. We've got up until June next year, this year. But from March onwards, you know, you'll get update 1 and you'll have further support, etc. And that's kind of how that's going to work. So just be aware of that thing if you're thinking of doing your migration in the future. So, step 4. Then we've got to validate our server. Now this, if you haven't made many process template changes, this is going to be sweet. I was unsure about this one because I knew that we'd made some. So we basically run this TFS migrator exe with validate / collection. You review the error log, see what it tells you to fix in the tool, and if there's problems that you don't know what they are in the tool, which is going to be pretty rare, you can send those to Microsoft. So you get ready for your import. Now you have to, and there's a whole series of little steps, and you map your Visual Studio subscriptions for your license. You know, everyone has a different license. We start with basic. You generate this import settings file. You've got to update this CSV file. You've got to create an Azure storage container, because what it wants you to do is turn your database into a DACPack file and upload it. So you've got to create this storage place to put the thing. Generate this SAS key, update an import JSON. These all sound pretty easy. And if you want, you can clean up your old database now. You could get rid of all the obsolete projects. You could split it into two. But then I'd end up with ssw2.visualstudio.com and ssw3.visualstudio. I didn't even want ssw2. So that was no good for me. All right. And the last step, import. So we warn everyone. We send an email to SSWall and we say, hey, we're going to be down for a day. Obviously, it'd be better to get the guys to work on the weekend. Create this DACPack file, upload it to that storage place we just created, upload the CSV to the Azure storage, run the import, and we're done. And then we inform everyone it's alive. Okay. This one sounded better to me than all the other options, although it looked complicated. So, I get everything. That's exactly what I wanted. I want a high-fidelity solution. I wanted to keep everything, just in case. It looked real complicated, okay? It is going to be slow, at least a day of downtime, didn't know exactly. And I couldn't migrate into just ssw.visualstudio. I didn't like that too much. My verdict, I give that the Tesla Award, okay? I thought that was pretty cutting edge, pretty cool. And so, with that, I'm going to hand over to Daniel, who will show us exactly how that went.
Thank you, Adam.
Didn't I crash my Tesla? That's just a pretend crash. Did this work for first time? This whole migration? You are about to see what exactly happened. Blow by blow.
Alrighty, thank you, Adam. So I've told you a bit about myself, but I didn't reveal what's my background. So you probably noticed that I have some accent, and I come from the country of Slovenia. So how many of you do know about this country? Oh, quite a few, about half the room. So, but you probably know about Donald Trump, you know, and there is something that the entire country is very proud of. So let me know, how many of you do know what is Slovenia so special for? Well, let me tell you one thing. Melania Trump, she's Slovenian, and that makes Slovenia rule the world. So that's what we are. So what I'm going to talk about is how we have done our TFS migration and what steps were involved. So the first few steps, like cloud prerequisites and upgrade TFS, we have already that in place. So our sysadmin has taken care of the AD Connect and about upgrade itself. So we were on the latest version, but that's the real pain actually starts from here. So what happened in our case? Well, I explored around how to get, you know, the whole thing up to visualstudio.com. And what I realized is, well, it's not going to be that easy. So first thing that I, you know, noted was, okay, we have to split. There is no other way that you could keep, you know, everything in one collection, because they don't give you that option. However, you know, in a few months or maybe in a few years, I don't know when that's going to happen, they're talking about merging those collections under one roof. So you're going to have one like group account or something where you could have control over multiple Visual Studio accounts. So one day it's going to everything sit under one roof. So that's kind of the idea. So TFS Migrator is the tool that actually takes care of migrating the entire database into the cloud. So let me run you through how this works. Well, like Adam said, this is all or nothing process. So that means that I can actually split the collection and take just a few projects. So let's say I have a thousand or maybe even more team projects in the collection itself. I can take just a few of them, split that part and move all that. Or I can take the whole thing that I have and then just, you know... What was that? So I can take just a few projects or the entire collection. So that's what were my options. So just to give you a heads up, I asked Adam, you know, how much was the collection or the TFS itself modified in the past? Like we had TFS since 2005 and I wanted to know what was the history before because I joined like 4 years ago and I have no idea what was happening. And Adam said, oh, don't worry about it. You know. We only had, it's a plain vanilla TFS. We only made that little modification. So we used to have the tool called SSW TFS Smashing Barrier. And what that tool did, it actually was a pretty fiddly idea. So on the web page, when you, you know, went to a website of, I don't know, a client or whoever you wanted, we had that add button, and that button actually showed you what work items were related to that page. So there were like bugs or what else had to be done on that page. It was a pretty fiddly idea. And for that, they had to modify TFS process template for each project. And added another field in there that kind of kept tracing of what was related to that page and vice versa. So you could go in TFS, click on the work item, and you could see what web pages are actually, you know, linked back to that work item. So it was pretty, you know, neat idea. So I go ahead and, you know, I run TFS Migrator to validate the collection. And, you know, the validation took about 30 minutes. So just to give you an idea, our collection was about 50 gigs. So to get through those 50 gigs, it took about half an hour. Now you can do the math, how much is going to be for yours. What the tool did, it extracted all TFS team projects, and it validated them, and in the end, it failed. And I was like, Adam, you said it's plain, right? It's vanilla. How could this happen? So luckily, you know, the tool itself gives you some logs, and you can go and open those logs, and that's what I did in our case. So what I noticed, I was like, okay, we have about 270 projects. Well, I didn't know there were that many in there. And the next thing was, well, there's the first error. You go, okay, maybe there's just one, hopefully. How many do you think, you know, were actually successful? There we go, one hero. You know the future, do you? Zero. Each one of them had errors. And let me show you something, because I have a... an error log here. So this is what it's going to look like. So that's the error log from, I think it was somewhere in, what was September? It's got thousands and thousands of lines. And what you're going to very likely see is things like this. Required element portfolio backlog is missing from process configuration. Now, how could that happen? So think about it. Our collection was, you know, there from 2005. And when we upgraded, we didn't upgrade all those project templates. So whenever you create a new project, it's going to, you know, take a copy of the process template you selected, and then it's going to stick it to that project template. And unless you manually upgrade the process template, it's going to be there like that forever. So until version 2013, there was no way to upgrade those process templates. And this is what you're going to see if you're going to upgrade your collection. It's very likely there'll be, you know, missing things there and so forth. What Adam mentioned before is that you have to run that configure features in each project that you want to upgrade. And that is going to get rid of vast majority of these problems. There is actually another way how you can solve all that. So this is what I've done. These were my common issues. So I had broken project templates with, you know, required elements missing, and there were process configurations that didn't, you know, they didn't have specified required types and so forth. There were missing names. And one of the last things that I actually noticed is there was a lot of global lists. So do you know what the global lists Where do they come from? No one. Okay, how many of you are using, running XAML builds? About a third of the room. Each XAML build definition that you create, it creates a global list as well. And that's where all those global lists are getting bloated over there. And you have to remove them if you want to migrate the collection. So that was another pain we had. So this is, well, first of all, how many of you know what the project process template is? About a third of the room again. Okay, for the rest of you, it's, how to say, a list of... How about if I just show you a picture? Might be easier. It's an XML, and it's not just one. There's a bunch of them. You know, that's just the main one, the process template XML. It's the parent one that contains all that stuff in there. And there's a bunch of things in the subfolders that controls this. So it controls the work items, it controls the build, it controls the source control, it controls the test cases, and so forth. So it controls everything you can see in there. That's what the process template is for. And how can you fix all that? I mean, it's broken now. You know that, okay, I have about 270 projects in there. How am I going to fix each one of them? I'm not going to go through each one of them and run, you know, and check what's happening, because it would take me years, not months. So what I've done, I have built PowerShell scripts that detect process templates for each one of them. Now, with TFS 2015, you get REST API. And REST API gives you that flexibility that you can call it from PowerShell. And that's what is really neat about this. So what I've done, I went ahead and those PowerShell template, well, PowerShell scripts, pull down project template definitions. And well, actually, it pulls down the project work item definitions. And then I look through all work items that are for this particular process template. And if I can spot particular names in there, then I can predict what process template it might be. Unless someone was heavily playing with those process templates, and in that case, I wouldn't figure out what exactly it is. But in my case, it was like 99% correct what the process template was, and it was easy for me to make those changes. The other thing that I've done, I found some scripts from Microsoft that take care of updating the process template. So for those of you who don't know how to do that, right now you have to go to Visual Studio, pull down the process template from Team Foundation Server, and then you have to play with AdminXE. To re-upload those work items back, it's a very painful process, very, very painful. And Microsoft simplified the whole thing, so they've created a bunch of scripts that you can pull down from GitHub, and if you have those scripts, you can easily upload or actually import-export the process templates as you like. So that's kind of the half the story, but I have to figure out what I'm going to upload. I can't just take, you know, Agile template and apply it over Scrum, because I'm going to break everything that's in there. So to give you an idea of what I've done, so this is the REST API call that goes to our TFS, and it pulls down work item templates. And if I can find in those work item types a definition for something that's called product backlog item, it's very likely that this is going to be a Scrum template. And the same thing applies to, you know, if there's a user story, it's going to be very likely Agile, and otherwise it's CMMI. And if I can't find any of this, then, okay, then it's probably something customized that I have no idea what it is. And what I do... with all those, you know, so this pulls down all project templates. So it's going to be 270 records there. I store each project name and the process template in a CSV file. And the reason why I do that is that I can leverage PowerShell scripts that Microsoft created. And those PowerShell scripts can do a bulk update. I can just say, use this process template, and it's going to be in CSV specified against each project what to use. And then do an update. And it takes about 15, 20 minutes to upload all those process templates. But that fixed like 90% of my problems. So all those issues that I had at the beginning, they were all gone. Okay? Any questions? Just feel free to ask. I mean, it's quite a hard thing to understand. But if you have questions, I'm happy to take them. So I had another problem there down there. And it says, field blah, blah, blah in work item time. Work item type has sync name changes equals false. DSTS requires this flag to be true. And what you have to do, the scripts, those PowerShell scripts that Microsoft's going to give you, they're not going to solve that problem. You have to use withAdmin in this case. So what you can do is you can go ahead and use withAdmin, say change field, and then you just turn the flag to true. And if you do that, you're going to get rid of that one. So you see in my case, I said, okay, CMMI process template has a bunch of those flags that I have to convert, but there might be others. So just bear in mind that's one thing that has to be done. So that was how I got rid of the fourth problem. Now, the only thing I had left was global lists, and that's where I had those, you know, build definition coming from different projects that were just, you know, building up, and nobody actually cared about them. But, you know, because the way TFS works, it automatically creates it. I had to go and remove them. I'm going to show you in a second what exactly happens. So you see this? That's the global lists that are created by the build definitions. You can list them using that command. And this is where exactly that they're feeding the data back in. And for those of you who actually care about, okay, in what, you know, build specific bug was found or something like that, that's where this was useful. We never used that functionality, but, you know, it caused me a problem. So if you're going to migrate, you're going to probably run into the same problem as well. What you can do, you can run the destroy global list command. It comes from wheat-admin as well. And if you do that one, that's going to get rid of the global list problem. Alrighty, there's another problem that I hit that was somewhere in the logs, and it wasn't very clear what exactly it was. What I noticed is that there was a pattern with those IDs, and it was ending with, you know, four zeros and a three at the end. And somehow I managed to find that, you know, on one of the Microsoft pages. It was hidden, you know, it took me ages to find it. But what this error is about, because it's not very descriptive, it may happen that at some stage during your migration or somehow else, team project, so I think it's, project collection valid users. If that collection, if that group doesn't have read permission on the collection itself, you're going to run into that issue. And if you don't get rid of that one, there's no way that they're going to let you migrate the whole thing. I don't know if you're going to run into that one, but keep in mind that, you know, if you see something like those zeros and three at the end, it's that problem. And you have to just assign read permissions on the collection itself, and then it's going to go ahead. So these were the issues that I had, and this took me like, you know, 70% of the whole migration in terms of time. It was going on for months. I was on and off. It wasn't, you know, like 3 months full-time migration, but you get an idea. Okay, so after the migration, go ahead. Okay, so the question was, did we have any custom fields in there with data that was actually in use in one of our project templates? I didn't spot anything in there, even that, what, you know, Adam said that we had that SSW smashing barrier, didn't cause any trouble. However, that data is going to get lost anyway, because what VSTS requires from you is a plain vanilla Scrum process template or plain vanilla Agile template. They're not going to accept any modifications once you migrate that. It's going to be there. It's going to be there. It's going to stay there. But, you know, unless you go and modify the process template later on, you're not going to see it.
So you still get the data. You just got to re-modify the process template.
Yes.
You need to repeat the question.
So the question was, you still get the data, but you have to modify the process template. And the answer is yes, but I'll double check on that one because, you know, we haven't modified our templates because we never had a need for that one. But the data should be there. All right, so we come to that part where you have to, you know, add alternate credentials. So I assume each one of you has a Visual Studio subscription. How many of you does have? Yeah. Sorry?
Yes.
Yeah, right. So it's like 90% of the room. Each MSDN subscription is associated with your Microsoft MSA account. It's a private account. Must be like, I'll come to that part a bit later. But it has to be like Hotmail account, or even if it's your corporate account, it's using a different, you know, way of how you get to that one. So when you have like, in my case, I have daniel.malik@live.com. That's my MSDN account. And I want to use, you know, after you migrate the whole thing to Azure, it's going to be associated with your Active Directory. And you'll be logging in as, like, in my case, danielmalik@ssw.com.au. It's going to be completely different. And what you can do here, you go to this page, and you set up alternate account, and you say, okay, for my danielmalik@live.com account, I still want to use danielmalik@ssw.com.au. And next time I'm going to log in with my Active Directory account, it's going to recognize that, oh, you have a subscription on that, the other account, so I'm going to let you in anyway. So it kind of covers you for that. Yeah, it would be probably unsustainable. You know, I want to migrate the whole thing, and then Microsoft says, yeah, you need another subscription. Thank you. So yeah, and that's how they solve this problem, and I think it's a really good solution. Alrighty. So for TFS migration, you have to run another command in TFS migrator. It's called prepay, and that is going to spit out two files. One is going to be a CSV file, and the other one is going to be a JSON. The whole thing is going to run the validation first, which means that whatever validation you ran before, and if it succeeded, it's going to happen again regardless of whether you like it or not. What you're going to see in those files is that there's a lot of, like, old accounts. We have seen, you know, like, thousands of records of our people who have been at SSW during our 20 years, and they have left the company. And not all of them exist in our Active Directory right now. So there were, like, about 50 accounts that still exist, but the vast majority is a history. So you have to decide what you're going to do with that history, you know? One option is you can go and recreate all those Active Directory accounts in Azure AD. Trust me, you're not going to do that. The other one is you carry them over as phantom records, which is by default. And what is that going to do? If you had a person that left the company 4 years ago, you're still going to see history that that person has done some changes in TFS and so forth. So nothing's going to be lost, but that person won't be able to do any changes. So here's an example, like Paul Sovell. How many of you know Octopus Deploy? Only one. Well, Octopus Deploy is an Aussie company that, they, you know, simplifies the DevOps process. And Paul Stovell, who is the founder, he used to work for SSW. I think he was one of the first employees, wasn't he? No? All right, Adam had a long history. So if Paul Stovell, for instance, wanted to join SSW again, and if we said, okay, we're not going to migrate his account, we're not going to recreate it in AD, he would have to get a new account created, and we can't revive it after we migrated the whole thing. So if someone, you know, quit and you want him back, you know, give him a chance and recreate account. For the rest, just carry it on. The other thing that you have to specify in the file, in that identities file, is license type. Actually, they have made a recent change, which means that regardless of what you put in the file, so you probably don't even have to touch this, but this was the case in the old days, you had to specify the license. Now what they're going to do, they're going to upgrade the whole thing, and if they can find an MSDN subscription for that account, it's going to be MSDN, otherwise they'll bump you down to basic license. If you don't have any basic license, you're going to go to stakeholder. Okay? So that's how it's going to work. And you can always reconfigure the whole thing through Azure. You can say, okay, I want to increase my basic user basic license quota, and then you can assign those licenses back again, so it's going to work as expected. Now we come to that import JSON file. So there are two files that you have to modify. Well, identities is kind of, you know, getting stable. You won't have to do much with it, but the import JSON file is the main one that you'll have to update. So first thing you'll have to specify is location. And that location is where you have, you know, put your DACPAC file in Azure. For that, you know, location, what you have to do, it's not just a random URL. It's a shared access signature token. So how many of you know what shared access signature is? Sorry, can you do that again? About 10% of the room. So shared access signature is like a special token that gives you permission to access any container in Azure, with a specific URL. And that means that you can give any person like read access or write access or whatever you want. And Visual Studio Import itself requires shared access read permission as a minimum so that they can pull out the file and they can stick it in there Azure Container. The other thing you'll have to do, well, you can use, you know, PowerShell command to do that, but there's a better way. You can go to storageexplorer.com, and you can pull down an Axe, and that Axe is pretty neat app. So what you can do, you right-click on the desired container inside a given storage account, and then you go and say, get shared access signature. You specify what exactly you want to get. Is that read on execute? And you pull it down, and you copy it back in here. Okay? It's very simple how you do it. Now, one thing to keep in mind, keep that shared access signature secret, because if someone else obtains that key for any reason, they can go and pull down the entire collection, do whatever they want with your files. So Troy Hunt will be after you. How many of you know Troy Hunt? There we go. He's a superstar. All righty. There are two other things I have to specify in here. So first one is identity mapping. So that's the CSV file I generated. And the other one is what's my collection name. So if you have used more than one TFS collection, you'll probably end up with a different name. But otherwise, it's very likely it's going to be TFS underscore default collection. Okay? Next thing you have to do is to specify what is going to be your account name after you migrate. So in our case, it was ssw.visualstudio.com. The second instance will have to be ssw2, but you don't specify .visualstudio.com because that's the default name, so you have to use a plain name, so ssw2, ssw3, whatever you want. Now here comes the final part. You have to specify what's the region. Okay, so in first bit, when we specify location, that's where our storage account is. This is where we specify where do we want our instance to run. And there are a few instances. You have, you know, United States, Australia, Europe instance, and I believe that, is Brazil LAPI, Adam? Yeah. There are a few instances. So you're Aussies, you're going to choose Australia, right? Be careful about that because TFS Migrator will warn you if the storage location, so where you've placed your DACPAC file, is different to where you want to put, you know, your instance. And this is where I got burned. I've put everything in Australian data center. So they said ideally it is to put the storage to put the DACPAC file in the same data center where you're going to run your VSDS instance. Australia doesn't have that privilege yet, which means that the entire data is copied back to the United States. So whatever I placed up here, it's copied back to the United States, and then it's replicated back from there to Australia, which means that instead of taking, like, you know, 10 hours, it's going to take double that. So everything is going to be replayed. Microsoft is having, I think they said that it'll take them about 3 sprints to fix the whole thing so that it's going to be, you know, standardized across all data centers. But for now, my recommendation is if you're going to migrate in the next, say, 9 weeks, put this thing in the central US because that's going to speed up the whole thing and the migration itself is going to be much, much faster. Okay. Oh, I see that there's another final bit, and that's the import code. So the import code is nothing else than a GUID for, that Microsoft is going to give you, and you have to request that. So Adam mentioned this before, that if you want to import a whole thing, you have to request the import codes. It's a temporary thing. It's not going to be there forever, but if you want to do that, you know, now, you'll have to get the import code. And it comes from Microsoft. You're going to get an email like that, and they're going to give you the import code that you put in the file, and that's it. Okay? So after you do that, you have pretty much everything ready. You go on, you detach the TFS collection, and that's it. Then you wait for another day, see if anyone notices anything. If they notice, you send an email that you've done that. Okay? Another step later on is you have to create a DACPAC file. So that DACPAC file is pretty much extracting all your data from the database, and what it does, it generates a bunch of scripts, you know, that can replay the whole thing in Azure. What they do with DACPAC, it's not, you know, remember when Adam showed you that OpsHub thing, when they replayed the whole history and the date times got lost? That's the problem because there's no API. What Microsoft is doing, they're replaying the whole database for you, and that's why, you know, they can keep the history as expected. And that's how you get the DACPAC file. So pretty much you run that SQL package, and when you get the DACPAC file, It's about 38 gigs, and this takes 3 hours in our case for 50 gigs of data. You upload the database to Azure. If your database is larger than 150 gigs, how many of you have such a large database? A few of you. There are a few ways how you can get the database down. One way is actually that you import the whole thing via SQL VM in Azure. The other one is you do some data cleansing. And there is another thing you can run. If you go to that URL, they'll give you a link how you can actually prepare the database before, so you can run it while the collection is still up. You don't have to take the collection down and, you know, run the SQL package. You can prepare the collection, and then when you run the command, it's much, much faster. But yeah, be prepared that this is going to take a while. Alrighty. So once you do all that, if you are doing a dry run, so there are two ways how you do it. Microsoft will request that you do a dry run import first. They're not going to let you go in production straight away because they want to see, you know, if the whole thing is going to succeed or not, or whatever is going to happen. So you run the dry run import first. If you do that, you don't want TFS to be offline in that time, so you go back and you reattach the collection, okay? Then you have to copy that file. It is a way to copy that via Storage Explorer, but if you want to copy it faster, use SCopy. That's one of the tools that comes with Azure SDK. And SDK uses, I think that they're copying the whole thing in parallel somehow, and it speeds up the whole thing. I don't know, I didn't measure, but Microsoft is saying that it speeds up the whole thing, you know, around 50% or so. But you can still do it, you know, via Storage Explorer if you want. That's always an option. So finally, we get to that part where you can, you know, run the whole import. And this is how you do it. You go back to your command line. You run TFS migrator import. And then you specify what's the file. And Microsoft is going to, you know, ask you to put in credentials. So as soon as you run that command, it's going to bring up authentication. And that's where you type in your username. Now, what username do you think you have to type in, and how many accounts do you have? All righty, how many of you have corporate accounts that serve like live IDs? All righty, 5%. How many of you use only work or school account? Okay, it's confusion. I can tell you why. So this is what you get, okay? You have an option to use work or school account. In my case, it would be daniel.malik@ssw.com.au. daniel.malik@live.com is my personal MSA account. But daniel.malik@ssw.com.au can be my personal account as well. And that's where that confusion comes from. So what I've done, I clicked on that one, you know, better safe than sorry. So you go ahead, and then you get this. As you can see, it was there on top as well. It wasn't the first time when I run that thing. So, and if you keep repeating it, it's going to come back with the same error. So, what do you do? Well, you go on and you clear Windows credentials. How many of you would do that? No one, okay. Next one. You try and you clear stored usernames and passwords. Still not good. Okay, you clear Internet Explorer. That doesn't work. Okay, you clear Team Explorer. So this one is pretty hardcore. I got it from the champs. You know, there's a special ALM champs list that only MVPs are on. They told me about this one, you know. So I go on and do that, and it doesn't work. So you switch a machine. That's how you solve the problem. You can't get rid of it. You know, it stays there. It creates like a token somewhere in registry. And unless you know where that registry token is, it's a five-minute thing. Just switch the machine. That's it. But Microsoft warns you about that. So when you're going to read the TFS migration guide, you're going to see that, you know, that they're talking exactly about that, that there are two types of accounts in use, and make sure that you use work or school account. It's a stupid name, but just click on that one. So finally, you know, you do that again. So you go and you run the import file. You type in daniel.malik@ssw.com. Then you go and you click on work or school account. And then it's going to say it started successfully. And there we go. Finally, it happened. Then you're going to get an email 5 seconds later. It wasn't very clear what happened. So I got an email from a guy who's, you know, working in the VSTS import team. And he says, oh, your identity mapping file is corrupted. And I was like, how can it be? I mean, you produced it. It wasn't me. So apparently, somehow the file got corrupted during the editing with Excel. And for some reason, it was using tabs instead of commas, and the whole thing blew up. So just bear in mind that before you upload the whole thing, you know, double check that with Notepad. It's still the best thing. So after you do that, you know, it'll take a while. In my case, it was about 20 hours. And in 20 hours, I received an email that the import was done and everything was successful. So I went in and I logged as Daniel Malik at ssw.com.au. It redirected me back to my Azure Active Directory, so SDS login page. So this is how you know that it's actually, you know, working with your Active Directory. You log in with your on-premise account, whatever username and password you have, and that's what you get. So this is the final migration after we went live. So all my projects were still there. I can still see the boards. I can see the code. I went there and I checked the files. I checked the history. I checked the test cases and shelf sets. Everything was there. So this is what you're going to get after you migrate in the cloud. So finally, I could go back to Adam and I could say, look, I have migrated the whole thing in the cloud. So ssw2.visualstudio.com is going to be the single source of truth for all old projects that existed in TFS on-premises. And with that, my work is done. And Adam says, well, yeah, better late than never. So Adam, back to you.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. All right, so that was the pain. Quite a few steps, and he got it done. So in summary, I have a few things to go through with you. There's plenty of advantages with VSTS. There are many ways. This is the best way because it's the most high-fidelity solution. You will need proper planning. You can see that downtime will be a day. You will need some strong nerves. Now, if you can't remember everything that Daniel did, we put it up at this rules site, rules to better migration to the cloud. We're going to tweet it in a second anyway, so you'll get it. If you can tweet it, Daniel, I'll retweet it. So in the end, what have we got? We got Stan, the sysadmin. He now is thinking up things to do because he doesn't have anything to do with his TFS server. JK is now branching on every single PBI. That's how we do. We have a rule on that. He's happy. Nick can't get himself out of Power BI. And I'm still finding mistakes in people's code from 3 years ago and asking them why they wrote it, which they don't like. So there's no more upgrades for us in the office. There's no more waiting for the latest features. We can now decommission our TFS server on-premise, which we're not because we have a plugin in the extensions in the store and we need to test it internally, but there's no good reason why we couldn't. I have to decide if I'm going to sack my sysadmin because there's nothing to do. So I will just mention that you need to you probably should keep your internal build server. You don't want to recreate all your build definitions, although it's not the biggest job in the world. You could. It still works, so there's no problems. And the best thing is you save dollars because it builds in Azure. If they're big, you can burn some dollars, so you can save it. Save a lot by having your TFS build server locally in your office. So the way that we recommend is you just connect your build controller to your new account, and that is the URL to follow. I just want to play this to you, this shell showcase, because if you think that your company is, if you think that you might be big, get a load of this. If I can just get the sound, Mr. AV.
Hold on. I think I turned off the sound.
Yeah. We're solving really hard problems using vast computing resources and big data. We have high-performance computing, advanced 4D and 5D visualization capability. We support 3 million lines of legacy code that we're moving into a newer technology platform based on ASP.NET. where we expect to write another 1 million to 2 million lines of code, and so we need a tool that really facilitates good collaboration between those various teams.
Our overall strategy was to move everything to the cloud as soon as we can.
We gathered up our Team Foundation Server databases, sent them off to Microsoft, where they ran their high-fidelity migration processes and transformed it all into Visual Studio Team Services.
I was pretty unenthused when I heard we had to move to Visual Studio Team Services. Any change is hard. The rollout was phenomenal. We were able to just log on, update, move to the new system. I didn't have to rebuild my code. It's just really easy to work with and to quickly see what is my state right now. How am I doing per sprint, per beta, per release? Our product is developed on two platforms, on Windows and on Linux. So we need to make sure that everything we build on Windows will compile on Linux as well. Because Visual Studio Team Services is in the cloud, you can access it from any platform.
Whether it's for Linux, for Windows, for Apple iOS, for Android, for all the other devices. So having access to the latest software releases is very important to us.
The upgrades that we've done over the past are typically pretty disruptive to the business because we have to upgrade the system. Now with Visual Studio Team Services, every 3 weeks there's new functionality without us even noticing it.
We have all of our colleagues accessing the same backlogs, the same user stories, and the test cases are there as well.
We're no longer running our servers. We've removed all of that cost.
Obviously, going to the cloud, people are mostly concerned with security. So the fact that the Visual Studio Team Services had their ISO certification in place was a great benefit for us. Shell was very open about wanting to be innovative and being very competitive. That's basically why we pushed very hard to actually move this to the cloud. We think it's helping our developers a great deal.
Digitalization will transform every part of the company. It will overlay our physical world and make it one world, whether in the subsurface space, whether in the refining space, whether in the trading space, whether in the consumer space. It will transform the whole company.
So they've got 2,800 developers. They migrated everything to VSTS, 15 collections. All right, so if you need some videos showing this whole process, we have
My name is Karen Ng, and I'm a group program manager on the Visual Studio Cloud Services team.
Don't we
Today, I'm going to talk to you about dashboards. It's a brand.
Okay. All right. So we have we put up a video on SSW TV, a longer version of what we've done today, and of course you can call SSW. We're good at doing this. So in summary, I took you through the war story, took you through the seven solutions we investigated. Daniel showed you exactly what we ended up doing. Enjoy the party tonight. You can tweet us. There are our email addresses. Thank you.